Chapter 27. The meal had been a good idea. While his friends relaxed, Jackman decided to get the work stuff out of the way before explaining the reason for this sudden celebration. Both Laura and Sam agreed there was a strong possibility that Ashcroft was following the pattern of many serial killers and was beginning to alter and refine his MO to accommodate new circumstances. His original crusade, aimed at making those poor people pay for what he saw as their transgressions, is done with, Sam said. Now, he simply wants revenge. The compulsion to kill is just as strong, and he still uses the same kind of signature that he used before, the photos and messages, but he no longer has to match the punishment to the crime. Laura added, he has chosen a different method, assassination using a gun, and has adopted a different persona. He's no longer the avenging dark angel. He's a hunter. And you, Jackman, and you, Marie, are the prey.
And all the others are collateral damage as far as he's concerned, Jackman nodded thoughtfully, including an entire town that he's reduced to a state of abject terror.
He's probably loving it, the bastard, muttered Marie.
Without a doubt, said Sam. Serial killers crave attention.
He must have been planning it for a long time, Laura said, ever since you foiled his previous activities.
The patient man, Jackman sighed.
Everyone was quiet for a while. Then Gary said,
How will the fact that we've brought a halt to his game with the Lorimers and are now watching his precious church affect him?
He doesn't know yet for certain that we have pinpointed the very church he uses, but he might well have his suspicions. He seems to spend a lot of time looking at us through a camera lens, so he could even have seen us checking out the different churches, said Marie.
He's very clever, Laura said, so he will probably have factored that possibility into his plans.
Over to Plan B, said Sam, unfolding his serviette and placing it across his lap. Jackman poured everyone a glass of water. It should have been champagne tonight, but they all needed to keep their heads clear.
As he replaced the bottle on the table, his phone rang.
Bugger, said Marie. What now?
They watched his face as he listened to the duty sergeant.
He ended the call and turned to them. Shots were fired in Salton a short while ago. Uniform and tactical firearms units were close by.
Marie groaned.
And?
All under control. It seems a group of gang members from the Carborough estate here in Greenborough went hunting for a rival drug dealer. Things went pear-shaped and some little scroat pulled a gun, but they hadn't taken into consideration the huge numbers of police on the streets. No one hurt, three thugs banged up and a drug dealer's address raided. Pretty good collar, I'd say.
The relief on everyone's faces was almost comical. Before anyone could speak, two waitresses arrived carrying steaming plates of food. Jackman sniffed the aroma appreciatively. This was just what they needed right now. When everyone had their respective dishes in front of them, Marie turned to Jackman.
Okay, boss, you've made us wait half the bloody evening. Now, cough. What's this all about? What are we celebrating?
Jackman grinned, glanced at Laura, and said,
Laura has agreed to move in with me permanently. We're now partners, officially.
As he told them, he looked quickly around the group and saw nothing but delight on their faces. No one warned them to be careful. No one said they should wait. They were all united in their determination not to allow Ashcroft to blight their lives and their expectations for the future.
Best thing I've heard in ages, Gary said, beaming. I'll second that.
Marie reached across the table and squeezed Laura's hand.
I'm so happy for you.
For a moment, Jackman's sadness for Marie and her lost love came over him again. He felt quite guilty, being so happy with Laura when Marie was still alone. Gary was a great lodger and an enormous help, but he was no life partner. Shaking off the feeling, he said,
Tell them about our plans for the mill, Laura.
Oh, yes. The builders have already done a brilliant job making it safe, and it's all plumbed in, wired up. The ground floor will make a fantastic consultation room.
They chatted on, relaxing for the first time in ages. Jackman watched his friends enjoy themselves.
For a precious couple of hours, it was as if Ashcroft didn't exist. Then someone splashed a drop of tomato pasta sauce on the tablecloth. Scarlet on white. Marie's white blouse and the spreading blood stain. All the horror of the nightmare came flooding back. It was as if Ashcroft himself had walked into the restaurant, a warning to never, ever let his guard down. Laura took his hand and gave it a reassuring squeeze. Only she had noticed. He whispered, "Sorry." She smiled rather anxiously, then steered the conversation to the important topic of what to have for dessert. Not long afterwards, they were ready to leave. It would be another early start tomorrow. Jackman paid the bill. It was a pity that he and Laura couldn't drive home together, but they had each brought their own car. They said their goodnights.
"I'm in the hospital car park," said Laura. "And so is Sam. It's only a 5-minute walk away. You get back to Mill Corner and Sam will walk me to my car, won't you, Sam?"
Sam nodded.
"My pleasure. And listen, everyone, as soon as this is over, you must all come to mine for dinner. And get a taxi because there will be champagne in the fridge. This wonderful news needs a follow-up party."
"Sounds great," said Marie, echoed by Gary.
Jackman beamed at Laura. "It's a date. How about you..." A loud crack ripped through the night and Sam Page collapsed.
"Get down!"
Jackman screamed. They threw themselves onto the pavement and rolled into the shelter of a row of parked cars. Jackman crawled over to Sam, pulled him into the cover of a shop doorway and did a swift evaluation.
"Marie, ambulance!"
"Sam!"
Laura crawled into the doorway and sank down next to her dear friend.
"Oh, Sam!"
Tears ran down her cheeks. Jackman held both hands over Sam's wound and pressed hard. The blood seeped through his fingers, but Sam was alive. Already he was beginning to wonder about Ashcroft's game. After all, thus far, he had always been fatally accurate every time. So why just wound Sam?
"Ambulance on its way!" shouted Marie.
"Okay, just stay where you are, you two. Sam might not have been the prime target. He's hurt, but he's alive." Jackman continued to do his best for Sam, willing the twos and blues to get there fast. Sam didn't have age on his side. Jackman remembered Laura telling him that he'd had some kind of heart problem, and from the amount of blood, Jackman was pretty sure that the bullet had damaged a major blood vessel. They needed help or they'd lose him. Laura was devastated. Jackman had always known how fond she was of her old mentor, but she was reacting as if it was her own father lying wounded on the ground. But of course, Sam Page was a father figure to her. She'd lost her dad at a very young age, and since her days at university, Sam had been there to guide and look out for her. Sam was regaining consciousness and starting to move.
"Stay still, Sam. You'll be fine. Just keep still until the paramedics get here."
Sam groaned.
"Laura, keep talking to him. I need him to stay still because of this bleeding."
She stroked her mentor's hair.
"It's all right, Sam, we're here. Just lie still. The ambulance is on its way."
"Marie? Gary?" called Jackman. "Any idea where the shot came from?"
"Negative,"
Gary called back.
"Too dark to see,"
added Marie.
"Just stay down. Don't forget, he's a patient man. It could be you he really wants."
"I think he's done exactly what he wanted to do, sir. He'll be long gone."
Marie sounded angry.
"How's Sam?"
"I'll be a good deal happier when the ambulance gets here."
It was odd that no one else had seen what happened, but he supposed they were off the main road and the restaurant was busy.
"At last."
Blue lights flashed from the end of the street, which was suddenly filled with people, noise, activity. Uniformed officers from Greenborough Station were first on the scene, closely followed by two paramedics. Jackman had never been so pleased to see an ambulance in his whole life. Even though he was inclined to agree with Marie that Ashcroft was already miles away, he was still wary. He was especially concerned for Laura and Marie. Their old adversary could easily bide his time, then strike again. Jackman handed the scene over to the Greenborough officers, who set about cordoning it off. Laura found him and took his hand.
"Sam's stable, but they are blue-lighting him to A&E. The medics told me the bullet has nicked the brachial artery, which is why he was bleeding so profusely. They need to get it sorted very quickly, or...
Her voice shook.
Regaining control, she said, "Luckily the hospital is only minutes away. I'll follow them there."
"Of course. I'll come with you."
He looked around for Gary and Marie and found them talking to the Greenborough crew.
"Could I ask if one of you would drive my car back to the Nick and leave it there for me?" he said. "I'll go to the hospital with Laura, and we'll take her car home."
"No problem, boss," said Marie, taking his keys from him.
She sighed, looking around her, evidently still searching the dark buildings and black windows for signs of a gun barrel.
"I hope Sam is okay. Tell him we're thinking of him."
He nodded. "Of course I will."
Gary took Marie's arm.
"Come on, Sarge. Nothing more for us here."
Jackman turned away. Yet again, that bastard Ashcroft had managed to ruin something beautiful. The man was like a cancer. A malignant evil, stealing beauty and replacing it with something vile. This had to end soon, or Ashcroft would destroy them all.
He wanted to howl in frustration. "Just let him make one mistake," he said to himself. "One tiny mistake."
Not far away, another man echoed Jackman's howl. That too was silent, sealed off by the gag around Paul Lorimer's mouth. Even though he knew it was hopeless, he strained against the ropes that held him fast to the chair. How could he have been such a fool? Believing he was hunting down the imposter, he had charged into the lion's den, straight into a trap. He'd often been to the camper van and chatted with the man he believed to be Ezra over a coffee or a beer. On one occasion, he had noticed some letters lying on the table addressed to Ezra at 7 Abbey Lane, Sultan Le Fen. But didn't Ezra live near Hull? Puzzled, he made a note of the address. So when the false Ezra disappeared, Paul had a good idea where to look for him. He even knew how he had made his escape. About a week before it all happened, he'd seen a motorcycle concealed beneath an old tarpaulin in one of the old outbuildings that they never used. He had recognized it as belonging to a bloke who lived in neighboring Thatcher's Fen. He'd worked on the engine a couple of times to earn a few extra pounds for Ma's pot. At the time, he believed that one of his brothers had stolen it, and reluctant to bring Ma's wrath down on their heads, he held his peace and waited to see what would happen. He had found it earlier that evening, concealed in the back garden of 7 Abbey Lane. He went to take a closer look. At that moment, a sack was pulled roughly over his head and something struck him squarely on the back of his skull. Now, he was a prisoner. Paul's anger turned to worry and then to fear. Why was this man keeping him a prisoner? What did he have planned for him? A tear slid silently from his eye. Some hero he'd turned out to be. Rachel Lorimer listened to what Jacob had to say and then sent the two boys back to their caravan. She had been remarkably calm with them. Paul, with a gun, and that vile temper of his, not a good combination. Rachel weighed up her options, of which there appeared to be three. It was late and there was a very good chance that Paul wouldn't find the imposter anyway. So, option one was that she could just wait for him to come slinking back, tail between his legs, and confront him then about the weapon. Number two was that she could go and look for him herself, but Levi and Gillian were already combing the streets for a sighting of his car. If they found him, they would be sure to bring him home immediately. That left option three, phone Marie Evans. And if she chose the last one, what then? Paul would be hunted down by an armed unit. Frightened, stupid, and with a temper that flared up out of nowhere, Paul could end up dead, shot by a police marksman. Things were bad enough for her already without losing her son. Rachel sank down at the kitchen table and put her head in her hands. She felt very old. How on earth had Paul got hold of a gun? And a handgun at that? She could only think it had something to do with the men and women he sometimes worked with on the farms. Most of the migrants were hard-working people, but there was a small core of hardened criminals among them. Maybe one of those had asked Paul to hide a weapon for them. Rachel shook her head. The kids had always been a trial, but now they were grown. She no longer knew how to deal with them. There was no one to turn to anymore.
There would be no more letters from Ezra, no more cards, and no one to share her problems with. Rachel Lorimer was on her own, struggling with a family that was fast getting out of control, all because of one man. Someone she didn't even know. Finally, Rachel stood up and went to the telephone.